Welcome back to the Daily Drama on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3, HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I just felt like it would be a little bit better to take a back seat, work on my mindfulness. It's been really stressful, this Olympic Games. I think just as a whole, not having an audience, there are a lot of different variables going into it. It's been a long week. It's been a long Olympic process. It's been a long year.
That's Olympic gymnast Simone Biles earlier this week explaining why she pulled out of Tuesday's team competition. Today she says she will not defend her gold medal in the individual all-around tomorrow, all for mental health reasons. Biles' high-profile decision coming after tennis superstar Naomi Osaka withdrew from the French Open back in June for similar reasons. Well, tonight we take a look at how these elite athletes have moved all of us to take a look at how we view mental health. We have great perspectives on this tonight. Dominique Dawes is a three-time Olympic gold medalist and founder of the Dominique Dawes Gymnastics and Ninja Academy. David Oliver, four-time Olympian and head coach of Howard University's men and women's basketball. And Dr. Nicole Cutts, clinical psychologist. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call tonight at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Thank you all for joining the conversation. Dominique, I want to start with you. This is a been-there-done-that kind of situation for you. You are acutely familiar with what is happening this week with Simone Biles. Indeed, all of the elite athletes at the Olympics. Can you give me an idea of what Simone Biles is going through this week?
Well, I must say that I do commend her for her courage, and it takes a great deal of humility to do what she did. She chose to listen to her inner voice and make a decision based off of her, what was best for her mental health as well as her physical health. What I heard is that she had even been quoted in saying that she felt the weight of the world on her shoulders. The journey to even qualify to an Olympic Games is an arduous one. There's a great deal of physical and emotional toll that it takes on a young athlete's mind, body, and spirit. Also, with the year postponement of the Olympic Games, that is another, you know, extension of what she had to give up and sacrifice, with even the uncertainty that there would be an Olympic Games. Now she's there and she's spent. She gets on vault. She has a bit of a mental block, is what I've been told. She loses spatial awareness, and that's a very scary experience to have. I went through it quite a bit in my career, primarily pirouetting and turning on the bars, or turning off the bars, or turning on the vault. And when you deal with that mental block, it is not something that you can turn off. You are then very concerned not only for your mental health, but also for your physical health, because the skills that she does, she makes them look easy. They are generations above anyone else out there on the field. And it worries me as a mom of four that have little ones at my gymnastics academy, because I don't want her to raise that bar so high, because I understand the risk. And so does she, which is why she backed away and is focusing on healing herself.
Well, I mean, I think you really kind of, you know, said this so eloquently. She was seen mouthing the words, I don't trust myself. I mean, the reality is that she does something that no one else on the planet has ever done. And
yeah.
And that is amazing, the pressure and the expectation, and even from the perspective of just being a casual observer, All of America is not just looking to the gymnastics team. They are looking toward, you know, Simone Biles, because everyone is expecting that. Yep. And this is a different kind of situation. And as I said, you've been through this same kind of pressure, and you've had your own challenges when you were in the Olympic process.
Yeah, right before marching out at the 1996 Olympic Games, when I was 19 years old and it was my second Olympic Games, I was one of the leaders of that squad, and I knew for us to make history, to be on top of the podium and the first ever women's gymnastics team to win a gold medal, I knew I had to be on my A game. However, the pressure got the best of me, and I was breaking down emotionally. And this was right before marching out for our competition. I then knelt down with my teammate, Amanda Borden, who was our team captain, and she reassured me, and we prayed that I'm not alone and that I can lean on these six young girls for support. And also, more importantly for me, I can lean on Christ for support, because he got me through that very tough journey of 13 years of training to get to my second Olympic Games. And so I can relate a little bit to what Simone is dealing with. However, she is the GOAT. She is the greatest of all time. She is at her second Olympic Games. She's doing interviews with a GOAT. That's pressure. She's got a leotard on with a GOAT. That's serious pressure. And then even recently, she spoke out about being the only survivor of the Larry Nassar sexual abuse scandal that is on the floor competing. And she recognized it's not just about the sport of gymnastics anymore for her. It is about changing the culture of the sport and leading the next generation of young athletes in a healthier environment. That's an enormous amount of pressure as well. So I'm certain that that has gotten to her as well. And then with the mental block coupled with everything else, it would easily take someone out of their A game for sure.
Did you ever feel that you could take the step back when you were competing that she has done this week? Did you ever feel that you had the safe space to do that?
Not really. At the 2000 Olympic trials following the prelims, I was done. I'm good. I really don't want to compete anymore. I had come back for my fans to say thank you and to say farewell. I was, you know, wanting it to have an opportunity to represent my country again. However, I was physically and emotionally and psychologically spent and very done with the unhealthy culture and nature of the sport that I tried to pull myself out of the competition. However, back in my culture, we were not allowed to speak out and we weren't allowed to trust our inner voice. And it was a very controlling culture as well. So I love that these athletes today, Naomi Osaka, can say no. If she feels as if it's detrimental to her mental health, then she can say no. Also, Simone Biles, even Michael Phelps, who has 28, I believe, Olympic gold medals, he's spoken out about depression and anxiety and things of that nature that normally athletes are told that, you know, you are to suppress that. You were told to suck it up. I mean, just think of the 1996 Olympic Games that I was in. The most heroic moment, or it was labeled as such, was Carrie Strug's vault.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely injured, and she was willing to sacrifice her physical and her emotional health for what? For the team to get on the podium. Yeah, if someone had a choice, they would probably bow out, you know, if they were going to put their physical health first, and she did not. At the Dominique Dawes Gymnastics and Ninja Academy,
exactly.
It is really about teaching young kids that they're more than enough. It is a very healthy, encouraging, compassionate, and empowering culture, which is different than what I came up in. When I was 20-something years old, I would give speeches, and people would ask me, if I had kids, would I put my kids in the sport of gymnastics? I used to always say, absolutely not. Now, as a mother of four kids, I felt very compelled to open my own gymnastics academy following the sexual abuse scandal of Larry Nassar. He was the Olympic team doctor that sexually abused hundreds of young girls. I knew him for 10 years of my childhood. He was viewed as a friend, but clearly a wolf in sheep's clothing. I want to be a part of that positive change, and my husband and I and four kids are doing that by starting our first academy of many more, we hope, in the DMV area. It's about changing the culture and making sure it's about lifting kids up and not tearing them down.
And it's been a year for the academy, is that correct?
We are celebrating your anniversary as of July 1st. We did. It's been a very interesting journey, nothing we could plan for. And I love the fruit of everything that we have put into it. The fruit is the families, the young kids, the young boys and girls that have been empowered by my most amazing coaches on the floor that work with them day in and day out. I am there running the business. I am there as their biggest cheerleader, but it's recognize the utmost importance of being a role model and knowing that their words matter, their actions matter, and any inactions matter. So everyone is about lifting up the self-esteem and helping not build champions on the floor per se, but more importantly, happy, healthy kids in life.
Healthy bodies and healthy minds. Dominique Dawes, thank you so much. I appreciate your time so much.
Thank you. Me on. I appreciate it.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to move on to drill down a little bit more with our other guests on this issue, David Oliver and, Dr. Cutts. Dave, is this different for men as opposed to women? I mean, isn't pressure when you're talking about high-performance athletes?
Yes. First off, thanks for having me. It is, as an athlete and being a male athlete, we are supposed to, have all of these, you're supposed to be strong enough. You're not supposed to ever, let your guard down or be sensitive and things like that. That's the culture that we've always been raised as guys, I feel, and nothing could be further from the truth. I think the mental health side of things is being brought to the awareness in the forefront is extremely, extremely a good thing, because we need that. And it's okay to have vulnerabilities as a male sports athlete. And if you don't have it, you just don't have it. That's one of the things with listening to the people who seem to be the loudest in the room when it comes to the opposition of this, or calling athletes weak, or they're supposed to be doing this, that, and the third. Those are folks that's never been in the arena. Those people have, probably at the L.A. Fitness Open run, they probably wouldn't even be selected on the 5-on-5 team, at their local. Those are the people that seem to be the loudest in the room that just never stepped out there.
But Dr. Cutts, when you look at what has transpired, not just this week, but also what we've seen, for example, with Naomi Osaka, these high-performance elite athletes who have decided to take a step back for their own mental health. Correct me if I'm wrong. We're not talking necessarily about mental illness here. We're talking about athletes, people who have said, I need to take a step back. This is a bit too much. I need a breather. Am I overstating this?
I don't think you are. I think you're exactly correct. Where it's not talking about mental illness, it's talking about well-being, mental health and mental well-being. And, it's important that you get pauses, you get downtime, you get to breathe, you get to think. And, we are really all, as a culture, under so much stress. And I think if you look at this past 2 years with the COVID pandemic and all of the racial unrest, we've been in a pressure cooker. So now on top of that, you're also having to keep up that standard of being an elite athlete. That's pressure on top of pressure on top of pressure. So I'm really not surprised that people are feeling it. But what I am heartened to see is that these people, these athletes, are leading by example to say, my mental health and my well-being is more important than just winning. I think they're really making a very important statement for our culture beyond just athleticism.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about Simone Biles and the cautionary tale of her pulling back for her own mental wellness from some of the competitions within the Olympic Gymnastics Week that she is supposed to be participating in this week, saying she did not trust herself, that there were some things that she needed to take care of as it relates to her own mental wellness. She will not be participating in the all-around activities for our competition this week. Not done yet. Still some other things that she may be doing this week, but she has decided to step back. What do you think? And what does this mean for all of us as it relates to our own mental health and pressure? Tom, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How are you doing? I just want to say that Mrs. Dawes could not have articulated it more eloquently you know, I wholeheartedly support Simone Biles, and she has, far beyond her contemporaries, modeled leadership as far as, you know, the decisions that she made. I've been in predicaments like that, and now I know what to do as an option, because I would have never thought about that. Even if I would have just stopped, I would have probably been upset with myself, as though I may have been a failure or let people down, but not have thought of it the way she thought of it, as being more stronger, to realize that, you know, it's just not, it wasn't her time. You know, one of my comments or, you know, concerns is it's been taking me a while to find an African-American male therapist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had different therapists, white male, white female, black female. But with the all that's been going on, including, you know, this racial pandemic that we've been going through and still going through, I sought to speak to someone that looked like me.
Yeah. Tom, I need you to hold on. I'm going to let you finish your point, but I've got to take a really, really quick break, and we will let you finish your point on the other side. We are talking about tonight high pressure, high-performing athletes, and the cautionary tale for all of us as it relates to our own mental health. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. This conversation will continue on SiriusXM, Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. Stretch is in for John Mons with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking tonight about the Simone Biles situation, an elite athlete, high-performing athlete under an immense amount of pressure, deciding to take a mental health break from Olympic competition. Some of the Olympic competition this week. It is something that we all need to pay attention to. What do you think? Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. My guests are David Oliver. He's a four-time Olympian and head coach of the Howard University men and women's basketball teams, and Dr. Nicole Cutts, a clinical psychologist. We had Tom from D.C. on the line. Tom, thanks for calling. Finish your point, please.
Yeah, I just was commenting and, you know, I have a question about why is there such a dearth of African-American male therapists in the DMV. And, you know, just my struggles with trying to find one. I finally did find one, but, you know, it was really difficult.
Well, let's see what Dr. Cutts has to say about that. Dr. Cutts, I'm sure you have some thoughts about that.
Yeah, and I thank you, Tom, for calling in. I'm not surprised by what the gentleman has found. It's true. There is there's a smaller number of African-American male therapists. And the reasons are multifaceted, having to do with cultural expectations, having to do with, you know, the fact that a lot of African-American males, you know, being a therapist is not the most high-paying profession, and a lot of people are focused on that. Also, you know, the expectations of men in our culture, as your other guest was talking about, skews them toward not being therapists, you know, especially for African-American men. So, you know, I'm not surprised, but hopefully that is changing as society continues to change, because it's very important, I think, to work with professionals who you can identify with. And so I'm glad. Tom, you said you did find someone?
Yes, thank God.
That's great.
Okay. Well, Tom, thank you so much for your your question and your sharing with us. We appreciate it, and we continue to wish you the best of health. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. David, did you ever believe that there was a safe space for your contemporaries when you were competing to take a mental health break?
That's a great question. Like myself, I don't think I addressed that personally. I never really seeked out a mental health coach and things like that. I think it was just a different generation of athlete, I believe. But it wasn't until I became the director of track and field at Howard of the men's and women's program that I really, you know, did some soul searching and had to go get myself a mental therapist, kind of to the previous gentleman's point. I was definitely ready for everything when it came to the athletic side of things, but, you know, retiring from being an elite athlete and then now directing, you know, 50 to 60 young student athletes' lives, that was the part where I was like, ooh, I might not be ready for that from a mental standpoint. You know, every one of those kids has a problem. Now I have 50 problems, and I have no one to unload that onto. Yep. I find myself in the DMV area, a mental therapist coach, and, we did a great job, you know, working with her and really, really helped me with that transition from an elite athlete to now a coach on the collegiate level. As an athlete, we were provided a lot of services through USA Track and Field, with the mental coaching, and I just never took advantage of it. So I do feel like there was a safe space that a lot of people did undertake, but I just did not do that myself during my professional career.
Mm. You know, one of the things that I believe it was Dominique who spoke about, you know, leadership and being able to, you know, for Naomi Osaka and, you know, as well as Simone Biles to do that. Is it leadership, or is this just, they just happen to be in high profile positions and they just said, look, I'm just going to do this whether you like it or not, because this is about self-preservation, David?
I think it's both. Both those young ladies are awesome athletes and even better human beings. I don't know either one personally, just from what I've watched and read about them. But the thing that people forget is they were put on a pedestal at, you know, 18, 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that most of us at 18, 19 years old, you know, we're trying to get a college scholarship if you're an athlete in the traditional sports in the States. We're not used to that. You know, on the world stage, being world champion, you know, they are beyond leaders. And I'm glad that they recognize, look, enough is enough.
Yeah.
We have to start treating mental health the same way we do physical health. If Simone Biles said, I'm pulling out because I twisted my ankle and I can't perform the routines, no one would have said anything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to start. It's the exact same thing. A mental injury is worse than a physical injury, because the psychosomatic relationship between when you're a high-level athlete, especially in the individual sports like tennis, track and field, gymnastics, that you cannot understate that relationship.
Yeah,
you gotta start treating that the same.
Yeah, yeah. When I was 18, I couldn't find my own butt with a map and a flashlight. So, you know, let's be honest. But, you know, and I think, you know, to that point that you just made, David, the initial report from, I believe it was USA Gymnastics, was that there was a physical injury, and then the later statement was revised to this mental health thing, because even in 2021, and you can give me your view on this, what is there still this stigma around mental health that, you know, prompted the statement to be one that is physical and not one of mental health?
I think it is a stigma. You can get an MRI and see that you've torn your hamstring. You can get an X-ray and see you broke your leg, but nobody can see any tangible evidence of a mental or psychological injury. And you really just take the person's word for it, and that's what we need. You know, like these great athletes stepping up and showing that it is okay. That if you're not, like they say, it's okay to not be okay, and just shut it down if you have to. It is exactly the same as a regular physical injury. I mean, I'm not sure what happened with the communications in her case. You know, on Tuesday, maybe it was a mix-up on the U.S. gymnastics part, or maybe they didn't even understand. But like I said earlier, it's much easier if she went out there and said, I twisted my ankle, I can't perform, nobody would have said anything. And now these, you know, people that do all this stuff for these clicks and these likes and stuff like that have all this stuff to say negatively about these two young black women that are on the greatest stages that these people would never, ever attain. Mm.
Dr. Cutts, talk to me a little bit about the difference between, you know, wellness, mental health, mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, you can be without a mental illness, you know, not even close to having a diagnosable mental illness, and still not be mentally and emotionally at your peak, right? You might just be dragged down. You might be sort of unconscious in your life. You know, that's not wellness. You know, you might be generally unhappy, but again, you don't have a mental illness. And I think that it's becoming more and more prevalent, at least in this, you know, United States culture, for us to focus on our mental well-being, you know, more than just, okay, as long as you don't have a mental illness, you're fine. I think we are recognizing more and more the importance of, you know, we talk about exercising our bodies and eating healthy, but we have not for decades been told what to do to keep our minds healthy. And I'm glad to see there's more of a focus on that, but, you know, we still have a long way to go. And to, you know, to David's point and to the caller that called in, and you're, you know, it depends on, you know, where you are, what community or culture you're from. But, yeah, I think that mental illness is still stigmatized. And therefore, you know, by association, the focus is not strong enough on well-being from a psychological standpoint.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gregory calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. Yeah, I've competed in high school athletics and college just a little. And I have a mental illness, but I don't necessarily attribute it to my athletic experience. But I just want to say, you know, mental illness or other adversities in life, I feel, should turn people to God. That's my solution. That's my remedy. We all have experiences. Some people have mental illnesses. Some people have experienced the trauma of somebody close to them. We all have things in life that should turn us to God. And I just hope that these athletes that have these issues just learn that they need to turn to God. And this is what I really want to say. We need to realize that something is greater than us. These athletes get so pumped up and thinking it's all about them. And that's where the mental illness comes in. We need to realize that there's something greater than us, and that's God. And we need to turn to him. We all can turn to God, and we all need to turn to God.
Hmm. Gregory, thank you so much for your comments. Your thoughts about that, David?
When you're standing on the line and you're by yourself and it's 80,000 people in the stadium watching you, and everything comes down to one race, one, you know, routine or whatever it is, everything that you've done for four, and in this case 5 years, comes down to that one moment. That is a lot of pressure, and yes, everybody has an outlet, and most, you know, do turn to prayer, meditation, things of that. They try to help you mentally, but until you're there, it's very, and in that situation, it's extremely, extremely difficult to even talk about or, like, explain. And that's, I think, when you go in there, it's just like a shock. I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, to our military brother and sisters, it's the same thing, like, the first time they go and see live action, you know, out there. You know, yes, you were trained for it, you were prepared for it, by the best that there is, but it's just something when you're out there and nobody can prepare you for that mentally or kind of physically. It's just something you have to go through yourself.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the things that Dominique Dawes just mentioned was her faith and how her faith carried her through during her competitive time when she was, you know, participating in the Olympics. So he is not, you know, wrong for, you know, for those who do lean on their faith when they are competing. And you don't necessarily have to be a person of faith, David, but when you to know who is, when you see those crossing the finish line at, you know, 26 and a half miles per hour or, you know, or touchdowns or any other, you know, achievements, because they, you know, they are, you know, pointing up, and I'm sure they're not trying to describe, you know, cloud formations. And,
right.
You know, and so, you know, certainly, you know, faith does have a component to, you know, to their, you know, to their performance. I did want to say, you know, Dr. Cutts, that, you know, from your perspective, where are we now when it comes to how, you know, the greater society begins to look at how not just high performance athletes, but high performance professionals view taking that mental health break, you know, whether it's executives, whether, you know, government employees or people who are, you know, small business owners and the like. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that it's something that we all should strive for, because, you know, there are countless studies that show that our brains and our bodies need a rest, you know. And as I mentioned before, I think that we're in a very high-pressure society for the most part, and there's this race to achieve, and I think that a lot of people's definition of success does not necessarily include how they feel inside, which is what, you know, Dominique was referring to, that they were pushed to achieve, but they were torn down on the inside, right? And I think that everybody, like you said, at whatever level, you need to try, you know, to dedicate, even if it's 5 minutes, to your mental health, to your mind, to that aspect of your well-being. So, but the reason why a lot of people are reluctant to, some people feel they cannot, you know, because just structurally everything they have going on in their lives. But I also think that some people are, they feel that if they're not constantly running, you know, if they're not constantly striving, they're not going to succeed. But that's because their definition of success might not include that well-being. I also wanted to make a comment on what Gregory had said, you know, and what David also seconded. I think that faith and a belief in a higher power is definitely, you know, helpful and bolsters a lot of people, but there is no one pronged approach. You know, what you need to avail yourself of whatever is out there, and I respect his opinion, and at the same time, I know that it's thinking like that has kept a lot of people from seeking the help that they need, you know, who may have struggled with depression or other serious mental illnesses, and they have not sought help because there's somebody telling them that this is what they need.
Excellent point. Excellent point, Dr. Cutts. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Cleveland, calling from Seattle, Washington. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking me on.
Sure.
I'm calling in representing the clergy crew and chaplaincy. And I like what I hear, that faith ought to be involved, but chaplaincy is overlooked in many areas. And sometimes we look at it only as a need when there is depth to show sympathy, empathy, or so, but in these situations, is there a chaplain that athletes can go to discuss what they're feeling? The chaplain's supposed to be the middleman in these situations. You have, you know, there's times where you might need a therapist, but chaplaincy is so very important, even this time as we are coming out from the situation, this pandemic situation. There's so much depression and suicide instances going on around the country that I don't know if people understand the need for chaplaincy in every area.
Mm. For, you mean in sports activity?
I think everywhere a chaplain is required, because it's not only in death that you offer support to families, and also you motivate you. I mean, it's different areas chaplains can function. Chaplains are trained for different areas, and I don't think enough spotlight is given on chaplains.
David, your thoughts about that?
Well, every USA team that I would have been a part of, USA Track and Field provided chaplain services. You know, now being sports psychiatry services. That's also the case at Howard University. The athletics department does an amazing job with those services for our young student athletes. You know, of course, given the time that we're in, you know, and the pressure and the stress that they're under as 18 to 22 year old young adults, the services are provided to them. So yes, I am in agreement with the caller, and we have been provided those services for the teams that I was a part of, and those services are provided for our student athletes at Howard University as well.
Mm-hmm. And Cleveland, let me also say, even though this discussion began in talking about sports, this issue of mental wellness and taking that break is a part of every profession, every vocation. As a matter of fact, there was a story, and I know you're in, you know, Seattle, Washington, but in one of our local police departments, there was a story just this week about chaplain services. The same thing that you were speaking about, where police officers have an opportunity to sit and, no pun intended, to really unload their thoughts, their concerns, based on the kind of difficult experiences that they may have day in and day out when they are interacting, you know, with, you know, the community, criminal elements, protect and serve, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that your point is well made, whether it's sports or any other kind of profession. So thank you for raising that for us this evening. I did want to raise another point back to the sports issue, Dr. Cutts. Mm-hmm. And I thought about this as it relates to Naomi Osaka. Mm-hmm. She is well known for being a shy person.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be an understatement. And yet there are other people, not just in sports, but in other professions, but let's stick with sports, where the thing that had been most troubling for her, those interviews, mm-hmm. afterwards, other athletes literally eat that stuff up, win or lose.
Yeah.
And so isn't this piece about dealing with mental health, mental wellness for high-performing athletes? Isn't it about the individual athlete and what works best for them?
Yes, and I think, you know, part of what you're alluding to is respect for the diversity of how people are. You know, they're introverts and they're extroverts, you know, and an introvert does not become energized by being out there talking to people. You know, they get their energy from being alone, from being quiet, you know, and she may be an introvert. And there's a bias, again, in this United States culture toward extroversion.
you know, there's something called Yavis. It's like young, attractive, verbal, you know, people who are like that, there's a bias toward them. And we often don't respect the diversity of thought and personality to realize that for some people that's draining, you know. And the other thing, you know, you mentioned, you know, we're talking about these elite athletes. And there's also an element of pressure that is put upon these athletes, and I'm sure David can attest to this, because of celebrity. You know, people tend to think that because you're out there, you're famous, they own you. You know, you owe them something, you know, and there's such a demand put on people. And like David said also, you know, people make these comments who cannot begin to know what your experience is, but they have all of these opinions and all of these comments, you know, about what these people should be doing. And, you know, that is a lot of that adds to that stress and to that pressure also. And I think that sometimes we do need to realize that just because you can make comments does not mean that you should, you know, that everybody deserves some grace. And we've been going through a very tough time. And I'm saying this mainly because I really did not like the way that Naomi Osaka was treated, you know, because she wanted to step back. You know, it was almost like, you have to do this. You know, and they don't have to. I mean, they have those rules in the tennis association, but I'm just saying, I think we need to be a little bit more respectful of the humanity of these elite athletes, celebrities, and all other human beings in general.
So here's the thing about that, and you know, I've had a lot of conversations about that, and the Fox News anchor, that's who was criticizing her, but then she realized when Osaka blocked her and said that the photographs that were taken on a couple of the news magazines, those were taken months even before she withdrew from the French Open. Mm-hmm. And so she was right in that regard. The difficulty is that, yeah, she was contractually obligated to do these interviews, and she paid the fine for doing so. And I think the big argument for that was, this is the job you have. Mm-hmm. And you, David, me, we all have things about our job that we don't like. Mm-hmm. And I think the big argument on one hand is, either you got to do this, or don't do the job,
or pay the fine.
Yeah, right. Which is what she did, and this was part of the what she did at the French Open, when she just decided, I'm not going to do that. That was part of the evolution, mm-hmm, of this. And suffice it to say, short of Michael Phelps had, for example, he had finished competing when he really spoke out about his mental health. But with Osaka, she was really one of the first, mm-hmm, to talk about the mental health issue as she was competing. And I think that's one of the things that really made it very, very difficult for her. And I applaud her for saying, finally, yeah.
Not with...
Yeah, I'm just not going to do this.
Part of your job. My problem is with the attitude.
With the response of the public.
Yeah, that the attitude, I thought, was very harsh and judgmental and unkind.
Yeah, and to the point, something I should have mentioned earlier, watching just the Today Show this morning, the having Michael Phelps there, mm-hmm, is serendipitous. Mm-hmm. Because he is probably the most high-profile person, and you know, who knows what is going on behind the scenes, where he is probably the big brother, mm-hmm, for these Olympic athletes, the Simone Biles and the other gymnasts, who are, you know, raising questions, mm-hmm, about their own mental wellness. And so, you know, I think all of that is, you know, is particularly, you know, good, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term, in this watershed moment, not only for these athletes, but for people who are raising questions about mental health. David, I'll let you have the final word here.
Well, absolutely. And Doc is so on point. You know, people think that they own you because you're on TV or you're an athlete or, you know, they say you make some money. So, you know, and it wouldn't be for if it wasn't for us and these type of things. It is a sense of ownership that individuals feel they have over you and over your time. The thing is I feel like we give air to people that we don't need to. You know, like you mentioned, the individual that got blocked by Naomi for talking about her shoots and things like that. We don't need to give those type of people air because we end up spending the majority of the time talking about folks that I feel are in the minority. People are on the social media is not real life. You know, these folks, I feel like the common person in America understands mental health as we all deal with that and working a 9-to-5. So we're all under pressure, like Doc said. So those type of things, I think they are sympathized. I'm just glad that we're bringing this more into the athletic light of things. Hopefully we'll have a great trickle-down effect, you know, that was started by Naomi and continued by Simone.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that they continue to do well and bring home the gold. I want to thank both of you, Dr. Nicole Cutts, as well as David Oliver. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, July 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.